from the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. The program today is Green Corrections, produced by the National Institute of Corrections. We have two guests by our microphones from Oklahoma via Skype. Mike Connolly, he is an instructor at the University of Oklahoma. And by our microphone, we have Stephanie Davidson. She is program manager, a program manager for FHI 360. The program, again, is Greening of Corrections. And we have an exciting announcement, ladies and gentlemen. We have a Green Corrections Challenge today, and I want to give out a couple websites, NICIC, National Institute of Corrections, NICIC.gov/Green Corrections, and NICIC.gov/Green Corrections Challenge to Mike and Stephanie. Welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thanks for having us.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Now, Stephanie, I'm going to start off with you. What is Green Corrections?
Green Corrections are the multiple ways that the corrections community can be engaged in sustainable and cost savings activities.
Okay.
It ranges from greening facilities to reentry programs and everything in between.
What we're trying to do is to be environmentally friendly within the correctional system. And that is the last conversation we have. That creates jobs, does it not, within the correctional institutions?
Both in the correctional institutions and outside as offenders are exiting, it can.
Okay, so this is a win-win situation for everybody, and it does save money for institutions, ordinarily gobs of money, correct?
Yes, states can save millions of dollars a year if they plan their programs well.
And we last time that we did this program, we had guests on who did talk about immense savings within their own states, right?
Yes. For example, Washington State, a composting program at one facility can save $30,000 a year.
Okay. So we're just not talking about $30,000. The different states that we are talking about, millions of dollars of savings, and state correctional agencies are constantly looking for ways to save money. So this is a way of saving money, a way of being environmentally participatory, as well as providing jobs for inmates within the correctional institution. So this is a win-win-win for everybody.
I would add one more piece to it.
Yeah, please.
As offenders become more engaged in their environment and their community, there can be a rehabilitation aspect to it.
Oh, that's right. I mean, we're talking about a reentry component to this.
Yes.
Because they can take, these are transferable skills that they can take out into the community.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And one of those transferable skills being, we are talking about mulching a little while ago,
mm-hmm.
was going into the landscaping business on the outside. I mean, this could be a real bridge for a lot of folks leaving the prison system, going out and finding jobs, correct?
Yes. Building
okay.
competencies and skills through those programs.
Mike Connolly, you're, again, an instructor at the University of Oklahoma. You have quite a correctional background we were talking about before hitting the start button. Can you tell me and tell the audience a little bit about your background?
Well, my position before I went to the University of Oklahoma was basically to handle the research office for the Oklahoma Department of Corrections. Before that, I was the executive director of sentencing commissions in Wisconsin and Maryland, and I also have done work with the Justice Research and Statistics Association, working with the Bureau of Justice Assistance on technical assistance to state and local community criminal justice agencies on evaluation projects.
So the bottom line is that you've got a heck of a corrections background.
Or I just can't keep a job, one or the other.
No, I think it's a heck of a corrections background. All right. Before we get into green corrections, because I do want to have an exploration of what is green corrections, where is it going, what's happening with that, we have a green corrections challenge. In fact, we're announcing it on this program. I'm very proud that the National Institute of Corrections has chosen this program to announce the green corrections challenge. What is the green corrections challenge, Stephanie?
The challenge is a video contest that engages states, students in criminal justice programs, basically anybody interested in corrections, into entering a video about their green innovation.
Mm-hmm.
We figure people on the ground know what's best, and we should be learning from each other.
All right, so the whole idea is for them to submit video pieces, and that could be through their cell phones, that could be through their smartphones, it could be through their video cameras. Doesn't have to be, I would imagine, a professional piece. Anything that documents what is happening in correctional facilities regarding green corrections, right?
Yes, they should visit nicic.gov/Green Corrections Challenge
okay.
for the rules, but
right.
they can make a video up to 7 minutes.
Right. right?
It could be 30 seconds if it really captures it.
Right.
Telling the story of what their innovation is and the impact it's had.
I want to see these. I want to see these because, you know, when you say green corrections, and when Donna Ledbetter from the National Institute of Corrections first proposed a green corrections program the first time we did this, I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, this doesn't sound all that interesting. When you get into it, it's very interesting because it hits every facet of correctional life. So the videos could be what? Give me some ideas as to what these videos could be.
So they could range. They could be something like an energy performance contract and how an energy system is retrofitted. Or it could be a gardening program. It could be a reentry program where people are reentering into society, learning a skill in a green field.
Mm-hmm.
Might be something completely that we haven't thought of, maybe related to correctional industries, a new way of manufacturing
right.
within a facility.
Anything that saves money while being environmentally friendly, that's what you're looking for.
Yes.
Now, that could be anything.
It could be anything. We would like people to focus on activities that could be replicated.
Right. But, I mean, that could be a different fuel within the
Absolutely.
Vehicles that correctional personnel use. That could be a different kind of lighting as long as it doesn't affect security. That could be beautifying the grounds of correctional facilities. One of the things when I spent my 14 years in the state of Maryland and went into every correctional facility multiple times was how beautiful, this is going to be a contradiction, how beautiful some of these correctional facilities were. Because they were maintained by inmates who took great pride in terms of how the grounds inside the wire and outside the wire, if they were on minimum security, looked. I remember bringing visitors in, media in, to some of our correctional facilities, and they were astounded as to how nice they looked. So that's green corrections as well. So this has an effect on morale of the correctional staff. This has an effect of on the morale of the inmates who are in these facilities. It can go on and on and on in terms of what green corrections is.
Absolutely. I love going and hearing stories from Washington State where they say when you're in the yard, it's so much more calm because mm-hmm. offenders are actively participating in green practices such as gardening and landscaping.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike Connolly, now, as an instructor at the University of Oklahoma, are you teaching this? Are you a proponent of this? I'm quite sure you are because you're on the radio program today. Where do you see the role of green corrections going?
Well, from the standpoint of state budgets, for example, I think Stephanie's point early on about the cost savings that are generated from a green corrections approach is going to become even more important to facilities on state and local levels for in the coming years. We're looking at a situation where our fastest growing inmate groups, the aging population of inmates, those that are 50 years of age and older, those with mental health issues, which is not always the same group, physical health problems requiring medical treatment. Those groups they add cost to the correctional budgets far beyond what we would call, I guess, the average cost of an offender would be, and those are our groups that are growing the fastest. And so one of the problems that we face is not just that the prison populations are growing, but even that the cost of many of those offenders grow at the same time that we're trying to divert a lot of offenders from prison. But if you look at a lot of the efforts to divert offenders, the offenders who would be diverted by most of the reform proposals out there are not the ones who are adding to the cost. You know, the rule of thumb for an aging offender, for example, as a cost to a correctional system is like three times the cost of the average offender. And so, and that's going to vary, obviously, from the 50 to 60-year-olds as a rule won't cost as much as the 60 to 70-year-olds and so on. But what that means is that even if we divert people, we're successful in reducing our prison populations. Even if we divert people, if they're the ones who are the average cost offenders and we're increasing our aging and our mental health need offenders at the same time, we would have to divert 300 offenders the average cost for every 100 of the the people who age in at that 3-to-1 ratio. And that really doesn't get talked about probably as much as it should. And so we're looking at that just on top of the normal types of pressures or triggers for correctional population growth in terms of, you know, the general population growing and the incarceration rate staying the same, and also just the problems of states and state and local governments being able to keep up with the costs that are associated with it. Right now, it's a rare state that is in good shape in their correctional budgets. And so one of the things Green Corrections does, as Stephanie said, is to force concentration on how do you best manage your resources. And I think that will become more and more important as the resources don't keep up any better than they already have been doing at the state and local levels.
Either one of you, mandates and regulations oftentimes serve as a catalyst to implement green corrections. I would imagine there are EPA requirements. I would imagine there are state requirements. Stephanie, do you want to take a shot at that?
Yep, absolutely. So what I find in most states is the biggest trigger for a state correctional agency to implement energy savings are a governor's requirement to lower those energy usages.
Right.
And it's very difficult within the correctional environment because you have people living there 24/7.
Sure.
It's easier for other agencies that are doing it to office space.
I would imagine in terms of having experience in terms of building prisons, I don't remember the term green corrections coming up. I would assume that in terms of constructing correctional facilities, green corrections is now an integral component of that construction process.
Absolutely. The American Institute of Architects has a special green corrections subgroup that leads it. Actually, the leader of that group helped facilitate the writing of the Greening of Corrections guidebook, as well as LEED, which is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design by the U.S. Green Building Council, has components that can be applied to green corrections.
So there are mandates, I would imagine, governors throughout the country, throughout the territories, are saying to their correctional administrators, hey, this is something you need to do.
Yes. And both reduce energy and sometimes have a LEED certified building.
Okay. And that's why they end up with the National Institute of Corrections, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing this program today, to assist people in terms of ideas, and also, again, at nicic.gov/green corrections, and to invite ideas from the community in terms of nicic.gov/green corrections challenge, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So partners can play an important role in the development of green corrections. Who wants to take that?
I can address that.
Okay.
So partnership happens at various levels. We're thinking about it through the challenge of how states can look at other effective practices. States can also do exchange programs. I often find when one correctional officer visits a facility in another state, they come back with 10 new ideas that they can implement. That healthy challenge and also learning from each other is critical.
And that's one of the reasons that the National Institute of Corrections exists at all, is to exchange information with hundreds of people throughout the United States and the territories so they can figure out the best way of doing things. I mean, that's the hallmark of the National Institute of Corrections, and that's one of the reasons why the National Institute of Corrections is picking up on green corrections.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the areas that we need to focus on, too, I think, is the community partnerships with, you know, churches, for example. A lot of the offenders, the reentering offenders, are going back to communities that will be heavily hit in the future, are being heavily hit. A number of them are what we call food deserts. And as a result, working with the churches, working with the nonprofit agencies and those types of communities to do the sort of thing that Stephanie was talking about working offenders into working their skills that they've learned in green corrections back into those communities when they come back will be important. And we actually investigated briefly. It didn't happen, but we investigated briefly working with one of the large hospital centers in Oklahoma City at one point, because they have wellness programs both for their employees and for employee families, and they're interested obviously in the health and medical care of the general community, and we explored for a while working with them to develop a kind of community garden setting in their on one of their properties. They weren't able to. There was a water issue that kept us from doing that, but we were really surprised about how, you know, we had never really thought about hospitals as being a potential partner for this sort of thing, but until we got to the point where, you know, you do tend to need water for gardens, but until we got to that point, it looked like we might be able to really forge a good partnership with someone that we had never really thought of at all.
Well, the bottom line is that who's not your partner when it comes to green corrections, because it applies to so many people in so many ways. But we're more than halfway through the program. I do want to reintroduce the topic. It's green corrections. The program today is produced by the National Institute of Corrections. Mike Connolly is an instructor at the University of Oklahoma. Stephanie Davison is a program manager for FHI 360. What is FHI 360, Stephanie?
FHI 360 is a human development organization dedicated to improving lives in lasting ways. Okay. We take locally driven solutions and work in all 50 states.
All right. The program is really, I think, exciting in terms of the fact that we are saving state and federal correctional agencies literally millions of dollars through this use of green corrections. And if you're interested in information on green corrections, nicic.gov/green corrections. If you're interested in the challenge, which is submitting a video up to 7 minutes, and again, it doesn't have to be a professionally done video. It could be any video of what's happening in terms of green corrections, in terms of any correctional facility. Could be mainline corrections, could be community corrections, it could be offender reentry, nicic.gov/green corrections challenge, green corrections challenge. All right. Now, in terms of measuring the success of this program, you talk about understanding the consumption of waste, water, and energy use is critical to measuring reduction in use, which could be difficult in older facilities. Many states have data tracking systems for energy where they can compare information from utility bills for waste and water consumption. Other measures may be necessary. A new recycling program, for example, may measure waste and recycling on a weekly basis, and also monetizing savings. So there's a variety of ways that different correctional facilities, Stephanie, can take a look at this and measure their results.
Yep. So I'd say most states go through four steps. They set a baseline and analyze current use. They implement a program, they measure use, and then they tweak it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the state of Maryland, they're looking at energy systems based on utility bills and tracking from there.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Alabama just signed a contract with Johnson Controls to look at how much they're going to be saving in one particular facility based on certain activities that will be implemented.
All right. And this is important in terms of the buy-in of the correctional personnel at that facility. Now, look, I've been around corrections for a quarter of a century. It's a tough job. Any correctional facility is just a really tough place to be. We have some people in there who are not the easiest to manage. Correctional officers are under an enormous amount of stress and strain. So we've got to get buy-in from correctional staff if Green Corrections is going to be successful, correct?
Yes, that's true.
All right, Michael, the question goes to you. So if we have to have buy-in by correctional staff, by the administration, by the average correctional officers, how difficult is that when you mention the words green corrections to them?
Well, I think it's very difficult, obviously, but I think there are things that you can do to facilitate all that. One of them is exactly what Stephanie's proposing with these videos and the dissemination of them. I think one of the most successful ways of dealing with this is just to take advantage of the interest of staff and the managers in the facilities and doing better with their resources as they're having to triage and cut back and demonstrate to them that it's not something that's just out there where you're talking about, you know, tree huggers and all that sort of thing, but it's something that actually has an impact and gets around their whatever predispositions that they bring to it. You're talking about something that in the long run, actually, as Stephanie alluded to, is going to make the facility, in most cases, a safer place to be, and a more efficient place to be, and just a more congenial place to be. And there are enough places out there that have experience with this that if they're promoted and the people who have led to the point where they are, such as the Sustainability in Prisons program, that you see in Washington and now extending to Oregon and so on, have the spokespeople for those programs be available to kind of lead the way. You find your successes, you promote them, you send their leaders around, and you answer questions from these folks when you present to them, and then within the facility within your system, as some move forward and others don't, you make special effort to recognize and reward and award the people who are actually making the effort. And over time, that should have a payoff as well. Don't you think that's true, Stephanie? I mean,
absolutely. I see promoting leadership of the people on the ground who are going to be making the changes over time will have the biggest success. When you look at Washington State, as you mentioned, Dan, who's the leader of the Sustainable Prisons Project, started out as an officer and has moved up to the second ranking position within the state in the field of corrections.
Well, I'm going to tell you a story from a prison on the Maryland's Lower Eastern Shore, where they went through a lot to maintain the yard and beautify the yard, basically using recyclable materials. And the place looked nice. It really did. And anytime you walked inside of that prison, you were sort of surprised by how nice the grounds looked. There was a disturbance at that correctional facility, and the inmates involved in the disturbance went through great lengths not to bother the plants and everything else, the shrubbery and the plants that they had corrected, that they had erected. So it seems to me that they, even during tough times, took great pride in what they had, and that had to. It shows that this is something that was important to them, which creates safer institutions. I think, Michael. I think you're right. I think green corrections create safer, saner correctional institutions and makes it a nicer place for correctional staff and inmates. And I think that that's maybe not an issue that's brought up enough.
Oh, I agree. I think that's how it has to be promoted. I think just, you know, everybody hears about you need to change your light bulbs and you need to get a more fuel-efficient car and all that, and I think you become kind of immune to those types of admonitions. But it's when you're able to relate it to their day-to-day work activity, they're able to see the progress like you're describing right there, and they're able to take ownership of it both as offenders and as staff, that you're going to end up seeing that long-term institutionalization and that commitment to it by staff. And when the new people come in, when you have turnover, they'll get oriented to it in the same way.
Are we retrofitting prisons and correctional facilities to make them more energy efficient? Is that possible? A lot of the prisons that I experienced in Maryland were just old facilities, and they had to be terribly inefficient from an energy savings point of view.
Yes. Older facilities that can be retrofitted are usually the places where you have the easiest gains. They're sort of the low-hanging fruit for energy savings.
Mm-hmm. But it's not, you know, it's not like any other building. It's not like an apartment building. I mean, it's a high-security facility, so retrofitting can be really difficult within the correctional setting.
Right, which is why partnership really comes in.
Okay.
Relying on your State Department of Energy, relying on utility companies that have expertise can really be helpful, and then you can have energy performance contracts. Mm-hmm. So if a state enters into that and they don't save $400,000 a year, mm-hmm. that company has to give them that money. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed savings.
Mike, and then we're talking about correctional industries playing an important role. Correctional industries, most people may not know this. It is the job creation part, the job training part within correctional facilities throughout the country. Correctional industries, I mean, in Maryland, my heavens, it was meat processing, it was sewing, it was manufacturing. I mean, everybody understands that the prisons make license plates. That's part of correctional industries, but it goes so much more. I mean, I even had inmates states doing my reading articles from newspapers throughout the state and doing a daily analysis for me. So correctional industries can be an important part of this, right?
Yeah, it definitely can. I mean, one of the concerns that you usually run across with correctional industries is that they're going to be competing in some way with private industries, and you get people complaining about that. But one of the things about there is such a need for both skill levels and the parts of the offenders, but also for the materials, that if were states to start or continue along the lines of developing their correctional industries to supply those needs to the businesses that are forming around green corrections. And green economy is one of the growing areas of our economy. The correctional industries could play a much, much bigger role, both in preparation of the offenders and in doing the supplying of more than, you know, we would buy our desks and chairs and things like that at DOC in Oklahoma. But there's no reason in the world why the materials that you're talking about for retrofitting, for, you know, if you're talking about some of the water harvesting and conservation sorts of things that could be going on, that could be done in ways that would actually probably be beneficial to the businesses that are out there and not necessarily get in the way or cause any kind of political problems with the usual constituencies.
Which gets us right back to job creating. We only have a couple minutes left. One of the things that I did want to point out, that there's a document called The Greening of Corrections, Creating a Sustainable System, and that can be access through the National Institute of Corrections Library. And again, the website for green corrections is nicic.gov/green corrections. Stephanie, if somebody orders the book, what will they see when they order this manual from the National Institute of Corrections?
So within the guidebook, it highlights four areas of corrections that you might want to quote-unquote green. One being the facility itself, one being your education and training program. Next is reentry, and then also correctional industries. Finally, there's also sort of a checklist and how-to for how you would implement within your own state or locality.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we end the program, I do want to get back to Green Corrections Challenge, nicic.gov/Green Corrections Challenge. I mean, in essence, the National Institute of Corrections is crowdsourcing ideas and asking the larger community to submit those videos. Again, it's up to how many minutes? 7 minutes?
Up to 7 minutes.
But it could be a 30-second Vine video.
Absolutely. Anything that gives us a picture of what you're doing and how someone else could replicate it.
And again, it could be shot on your cell phone, your tablet. It doesn't have to be a big fancy production. You're just talking about a bit of documentation in terms of what's happening.
Yep. Tell us your story, formally or informally.
Tell us your story. And you're going to be taking all of these videos and doing what with them? Advertising?
That's great. In October, we will be holding a symposium in which challenge winners will be announced. We'll also be hosting these online and then doing a series of webinars featuring the best practices that we've seen in the videos.
You know, wouldn't it be nice, instead of the public's perception of correctional facilities as dark and dank places where they see all of the shrubbery and the flowers and the beautification projects going on, wouldn't that be a nicer image of what corrections is and how people can relate to the fact that the greenery and the recycling has or could have a positive effect on the lives of the people who've got to go into that institution every day?
Absolutely. If people could really see how green corrections can help an offender reintegrate into their community and be a benefit to that community, mm-hmm. That would be a best-case scenario.
Because, Michael, we have 30 seconds. The bottom line in all of this is that, again, as you said, this creates jobs. I mean, it's one of the fastest-growing sectors of our economy, not green corrections, but environmentally friendly practices. So the person comes out of the prison system, he's qualified for a variety of jobs in that green community.
Yeah, and that's something that is going to require our correctional leadership to reorient themselves to really thinking along those lines and making sure that that they're receptive and they're making sure that everyone below them down the organization understands this is a priority.
All right, Mike, you've got the final word with that, because we do have to close. Our guest today has been Mike Connolly. He's an instructor at the University of Oklahoma. Stephanie Davidson is a program manager for FHI 360, the program today has been on green corrections, produced by the National Institute of Corrections. Donna Ledbetter specifically, we always thank her for her wonderful programs. It's called the Greening of Corrections at nicic.gov/greencorrections, and that video challenge, nicic.greencorrectionschallenge. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your comments. We even appreciate your criticisms, and have yourselves a very pleasant day.